Book of Acts, chapter 8. Just a short reading this evening. Opening four verses of the chapter I want to read and bring to you for our time remaining together this evening. Acts chapter 8, and the opening verse. And Saul was consenting unto his death. Speaking, of course, of the death of Stephen. And at that time there was a great persecution against the church which was at Jerusalem. And they were all scattered abroad throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. And devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made great lamentation over him. As for Saul, he made havoc of the church, entering into every house and healing men and women, committed them to prison. Therefore they that were scattered abroad went everywhere, preaching the word. Amen. Henry T. Mahan, he wrote, speaking of persecution, he said, "Persecution and opposition ought to encourage rather than discourage us. For we are faithfully warned by our Lord that the natural man and the religionist will not receive the gospel of the grace of God." Over the last number of studies in the book of Acts, we have focused our attention upon the man Stephen. We looked firstly at how this man had come to the fore, and how he had been raised up within the church, and how he was that shining light within the church. We looked at the message that he brought, and how it was a faithful message, how it was a message that presented and brought the glory of God to the people. We looked at the death that he experienced, and how Stephen passed from this life into the presence of God. He had looked up into the heavens, he had saw, as it were, the clouds being taken away, and he had seen his Lord standing at the right hand of the Father with that concern, with that love and compassion for his servant. And of course, it simply said he went to sleep, never to wake in this life again. This was yet another marked increase in the devil's attack against Christ's church. I trust you remember over the opening chapters that we've already seen the various attacks that have been experienced. It began with Peter and John being arrested. After that, they had raised that man to his feet and preached in the temple, they were arrested, they were held overnight, and then the devil had then moved to attack from within. Ananias and Sapphira had stolen, had robbed the Lord, and had brought that sin into the church. And then in Acts 5, all of the apostles had been held in the common prison. And now, the bright shining light in the form of Stephen has been taken, and his life ended. So what happens next? How does a church move forward after this? How will the world react to a man being killed for being a Christian? How will the church react to one of their own being stoned to death? How will the Lord react to one of his children being taken? What is the aftermath? Well, these opening verses which we've read together this evening, they inform us of three results, three direct results of the martyrdom of Stephen. I want you to see them this evening with me. I want you to see, firstly, the verses 1 and 3, you have the flames of persecution. The flames of persecution. It begins the chapter with the words, "And Saul was consenting unto his death. And at that time there was a great persecution against the church which was at Jerusalem." The verse 3, it says, "As for Saul, he made havoc of the church. He entered into every house, and healing men and women, committed them to prison." You know, in reality, the martyrdom of Stephen was but the spark that lit the flame. As I highlighted earlier, every point of persecution up until this point had been directed at the apostles. Peter and John being arrested, two of the apostles. Ananias and Sapphira, even their sin coming into the church, that had to be dealt with by the apostles. It was a test, as it were, to Peter and how he would handle that sin. And then all of the apostles being arrested. But now it's moved, now it's changed, now the direction has ever so much changed away from the apostles, and it's one of the deacons. And he's killed. But then, when Stephen's killed, it's simply just a trigger. It's just fuel in the fire. Verse 1, it says, at that time. That can be translated from the original, that very day. So literally, as the last stone is thrown at Stephen, as they see he's now dead, they immediately turn and go, right, let's get them. One's not enough. One member of the church being killed is not enough. It doesn't appease their anger. It doesn't appease their wrath. It doesn't appease their hatred. Such is the hatred of the world that they now go after the normal church members. Reason for it? Well, it's possible that they looked at it and said, well, this man came up through the ranks of the members, and he then stood in front of us and we couldn't put him down. He's not an apostle. He's not one that walked for those 3 years with Christ. He's not one that was involved in that inner circle of Christ like the apostles. This is one, the Hellenistic Jews, that's now come into the church. He's of Greek descent, and yet he's come, and he's already grown so much that whenever we put it to him, we couldn't put him down. We couldn't defeat him with our words. So they immediately turn and say, right, we now go after the church. The floodgates of hatred have opened against the gospel. These men are filled with such anger and rage that they will not stop. In the battlefield, when men act in this way, it's known as furor. It's whenever you're filled with such adrenaline and such anger that you can't actually explain your actions. And they're overcome with such anger and hatred towards the church that they literally go out and just charge at them. How bad did it get for the normal members of the church? In verse 3 it says, Saul made havoc of the church. In the original, this means he destroyed it as an animal tears its prey apart. He destroyed it as a city that's overthrown in battle and razed to the ground. That's what Saul and his followers did to the members of the church in Jerusalem. They went into home after home and they ransacked them. They destroyed the houses. They brought the men and the women out of the houses and they cast them into prisons. Husbands were separated from their wives. Children were separated from their parents. Physical, verbal abuse was upon them. They're cast into prison. They're tortured, and they're tortured even on to the point of death. Simply because they're Christians. Paul testified in Acts 22 in verse 4. He said, I persecuted this way unto death, binding and delivering into prisons both men and women. And in Acts 26 in the verses 10 and 11, he actually went further. He says this, which thing I also did in Jerusalem, and many of the saints did I shut up in prison, having received authority from the high priest. And when they were put to death, I gave my voice against them. In the verse 11, he says, and I punished them often this every synagogue, compelled them to blaspheme, and being exceedingly mad against them, I persecuted them even unto strange cities. Saul went into their homes, he went into their synagogues, And even when the Christians moved away, even whenever those that weren't targeted at the very start, even as they sought to move and move to the next town or the next city, he chased them. He said, it's not enough to get you out of Jerusalem. We need to get you out of the world. We need to completely eradicate all gospel witness. Wherever you go, I'm following. Doesn't matter how far, I'm going to chase you down. I'm going to hunt you down. What parallels is there? Saul was the Nazi of his day. That's how bad he was. And you consider how Nazi Germany, whenever they took over a land and a city, they looked for every Jew. They took every Jew's home, every Jew's livelihood, and sought to take the lives. That's what Saul did. He was a parallel, an equivalent of the Spanish inquisitors against the Christians. Those Roman Jesuit priests. That was Saul. He's a parallel of Claverhouse against the Scottish Covenanters. And how he chased them over meadow and moorland, and even those that were hiding, he went after them as such. Evil and wickedness, he destroyed so many Christians in Scotland for being Christian. Saul literally tore the church apart. And it caused him great joy. You see, in verse 1 it says Saul was consenting unto his death. That word consenting is sundukio. Means to take great pleasure. In other words, every man, all of the witnesses are there, and it tells us that the witnesses laid their coats at Stephen or at Saul's feet whenever they stoned Stephen. And those witnesses are there and they're hurling the stones, and Saul is so rejoicing in it. He's like the cheerleader. He holds their coats and he says, hit him, kill him. And the cheerleader became the commander. Because when the first is killed, then they go after, and he says, right, come with me. Brethren and sisters, we shouldn't be surprised. The world hates the gospel and hates the messengers of it. The world killed the holiest man that ever lived in Christ Jesus. Why should we expect them to accept us? I don't say that to provoke fear. I say it because it's a reality. John 15 and 20, the Lord said, if they have persecuted me, they will also persecute you. In John 16 and 2, he said, they shall put you out of the synagogues. Yea, the time cometh that whosoever killeth you will think that he doeth God's service. John 16 and 2 was fulfilled in Saul. Because that's Saul's testimony. I got them out of the synagogues. I rounded them up. And I thought I was doing God's service. Because Acts 22 and 3. He said he was zealous toward God. See, why was he zealous? Because these men were coming out. And they're saying, the apostles, Stephen and the like. They were all saying, Christ died. Yes, you put him to death. But he's alive. He's resurrected from the dead. Thought these men are against God. The devil blurred his vision of the gospel and stoked those flames of hatred seeking to destroy the witness of Christ. That's how bad it can get for being a Christian. We live in a land today that generally is accepting. That may not always be the case. Hasn't been in the past. May not be in the future. But the Lord promises it. Happens to brethren and sisters of ours across the world. Lifted from their homes. Simply for being a Christian. The flames of persecution. Then I want you to see in the verse 2 the faithfulness of the pallbearers. The faithfulness of the pallbearers. Verse 2, it says, devout men carried Stephen to his burial and made great lamentation over him. You know, in the heat of the persecution and the wickedness comes this beautiful light of grace. Remember, Saul and the mob had begun that very day. The moment that last stone hit Stephen and he's dead, Saul and his mob then turned their attention and they said, right, now we go after the rest. They left Stephen's body in the street to go and attack other Christians. And you just imagine the upheaval in Jerusalem that day. You can imagine all of the noise and the commotion as that mob went from house to house, as they went in the synagogues, as they went up and down the streets looking for Christians to attack and Christians to arrest. And yet there's a lifeless body lying in the street. And suddenly, with all of the anger and the wickedness and the noise and the commotion that's going on, suddenly devout men just enter the scene. No names are given. No status within the church is given. Simply refers to them as devout men, faithful members of the church. But what a testimony, what faithfulness is found in them. Because firstly, I want you to see and to notice their compassion. It said devout men carried Stephen to his burial. They heard what had happened. They saw what had happened. They knew their brother was lying dead in the street. They couldn't sit idly by. The Christian love in that church one towards another ran deep. Here's one of our own. No one cares for him. Here's one of our own who has suffered the most and the harshest and the hottest attack of the devil. Here's one that has been put to death by the mob simply for being a Christian. We can't leave him. Their love for their brethren, for their brother in Christ, was so strong, they set everything else to the side. You know, they could have said, oh, we need to get out of here. We need to hide. We need to secure our families. We need to secure our possessions. We need to go into hiding. We need to flee this city. We need to preserve our lives. They're coming after the Christian church. No, there's our brother. We don't leave any of our brethren behind. We love them and we care for them. Brethren and sisters, there's a lesson in that for us all. Never a child of God's going through great trials, great attack from the devil and from the world. It's not a time to leave them behind. It's not a time to leave them on their own. It's a time to identify with them. It's a time to show them love and compassion. It's a time to stand with them. I'm sure you've heard it many times before. It's been rehearsed so many times. The Christian church is the only people that kick their own when they're down. That's so often true. Now, if there's any attack or any child of God falls, and I'm not saying Stephen fell, he didn't. The attack came and he was taken. But so often the Christian church, they leave behind their wounded. Any that's lightweight or any that's on the edges or struggling at all, they're left. But the compassion of Christ is seen in these men. Their love is for their brother Stephen. And they went and they lifted his body and they washed it. And they wound it in linen cloths. and they gave him an honorable burial. You see, the love one towards another in the Church of Christ ought to run deep, regardless if it sets us apart from the world. Regardless of all of the majority in the world is saying, oh, that's a Christian, leave them alone. But the love for each other ought to run deep. That we never leave each other alone. It's not simply saying we love our brethren. It's not simply saying that we love our sisters in Christ. It's showing it. 1 John 3 in the verse 18, John writing, he says, my little children, let us not love in word, neither in tongue, but in deed. In other words, show it. Show it with the actions. I want you to see their compassion, but then I want you to see their courage. It says, devout men carried Stephen to his burial. Saul and his men have left the scene of Stephen's death. They're immediately hunting for Christians. Just imagine Saul as he goes. He says, find me Christians, bring them, arrest them, cast them into the prison. And they're going in the synagogues. Anyone that's praying, they're arresting them. Anyone that's praising, they're arresting them. Anyone that's listening to a sermon being preached, they're arresting them. These men know what their actions meant. They know by stepping forward and lifting that body instead of walking past it, they're immediately identifying and stating very openly and very clearly, I'm a member of the church. That's my brother. They might as well have just put their arms together and said, go ahead and rest me. They humbly, meekly put their heads above the parapet. What courage. Even though that meant a mark on them, a mark on their family, a mark on their homes, they say, no, that brother that I love needs buried. You know, it takes real courage to be a Christian. Takes real courage to stand with another Christian, especially when that Christian's being persecuted. Takes real courage to stand with the church. I think of the early days of our own denomination. Took real courage to come away from Presbyterian Church of Ireland Methodists and to be identified as a Free Presbyterian. One of the founding men of Cross Guard Church, a man by the name of Hugh James Adams. A wonderful man I never had the privilege of meeting, but I visited his daughter whenever I was placed in Cross Guard. He was an elder in Lasara. Whenever they refused to give that hall for Dr. Paisley to hold his mission, he was one of the first to be suspended, stroke, resigned. He owned his own shop. The moment that he left Lasara, and he promised him the night that he left it, he says, I will never be back in this church, man. The moment he left, not one Protestant of his clients ever came back through the door of his shop. He said, never again. But yet the Lord brought others in for his business. I think of some of the old Macaulays outside Ballymoney. They left Drumrea Presbyterian. Old man Macaulay was, and I put this the best way I can, he was given a hiding by the Presbyterian men for leaving the Presbyterian church and for going to the free. It takes courage to stand for Christ. Brothers and sisters, we need that courage. not to hide away, not to talk about God and the gospel in hushed tones, in case someone hears us. There's a man who was visiting down this way the other day with his business, and he phoned me and he says, "I'm in the area, would you want to meet for lunch?" And so I went and met him, and we were chatting in a coffee shop in Oma. And you know what struck me? We were sitting talking about salvation. The church he's in, the church I'm in. Never talked quietly once. And the wonderful thing was, just behind him, he didn't realize, but behind him was two young people. And the lad that was sitting closest to him, whenever he heard us talking about salvation and the gospel, he kind of sat like this here, trying to hear every word. Never be embarrassed about the gospel. I've seen Christians, and I've been in Christians' company, and they're out in the street and they'll whisper about the Bible, about being a Christian. If someone asks them, what did you do over the weekend? Not much. They'll never say, I went to church and I worshiped God. They're so scared. Child of God, have courage to stand for Christ. Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. You'd never find Paul sitting in a coffee shop whispering about salvation. Child of God, don't be ashamed. Have that spiritual boldness, that courage. As Deuteronomy 31 and 6, it says, be strong and of a good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them, for the Lord thy God, he is that doth go with thee. Wherever you go, Christ is with you. Whoever's company you're in, and whoever you're speaking on behalf of, whether it be with a child of God or with someone in the world, never be afraid to speak of Christ. Never be ashamed of the gospel. These men had compassion. These men had courage. But I want you to see as well, these men had conviction. You read verse 2 again, it says, devout men carried Stephen to his burial. And then notice the words, they made great lamentation over him. They broke the law. You see, it was forbidden in the cases of executed criminals and those that were put to death, it was forbidden to lament over them. Someone that was killed by the state or by the religion for any crime such as blasphemy or any other sin, you were to bury their body. You were not allowed to have a funeral over it. You were not allowed to lament over them. You were to bury them and go immediately home. But these devout men, they lift Stephen's body, they clean it, they wrap it, they bury it, and then they have a funeral service over it, and they raise lamentation. What are they doing? They're simply saying this to the government, and they're simply saying this to the religious circles in the state. This man was innocent. He's not a blasphemer. We're convinced of our brother Stephen. He knew the gospel. He knew the God of heaven and of earth. Everything you've said against him is a lie. And you taking him and killing him was a complete disagreement with the laws of this land and with the laws that they governed themselves with. He's not guilty of blasphemy. He's not guilty of anything. That's what they're doing with their lamentation. They're convinced. And they stand upon their convictions. You see, the martyrdom had caused them to make a stand. Sometimes there are those in churches. They like to stay in the background, as it were. They're the quiet members of the church. These devout men, quite possibly, were ones like it. Never to say boo, as it were, to anybody. But yet, Stephen's body lying in the ground, they said, no, we're not accepting that. And they're the ones who suddenly come out of the shadows, as it were, and they take their stand for Christ. faithfulness of the pallbearers. But then thirdly and finally, in the verse 4, I want you to see the flourishment of preaching. The flourishment of preaching. It says, therefore they that were scattered abroad went everywhere preaching the word. Oh, what a monumental positive came out of the martyrdom of Stephen. The church is suffering as great as it's possible to suffer. The church is under as big an attack as it's possible for a church to be attacked. They're being killed for their faith. They're being arrested. They're losing their homes. They're losing their families. They're losing everything. But yet there's a positive. There's a reason for it all. Too often, whether it be individually or hard times in a church family, church setting, we lose faith. We get angry with God. We ask the question, why? Why is God allowing this attack to come upon us? Why is God allowing this attack to be upon our church? Why is God allowing our church to go through dark days? Why is God allowing all of these things to happen? You know, those Christians in that day, they could have asked that question. Why is God casting us out like this? Why is God allowing Saul to wreck the church? Why is God allowing us to be arrested and killed for our faith? Why are we being split up as families? Why are we being scattered out of Jerusalem? Remember this, Romans 8:28, all things work together for good to them that love God. Them that are called according to his purpose. You know, in the heat of that attack and the flames of those persecution, it could have been very easy to ask, why is God allowing this? Why have I lost my family? Why have I lost my home? Why have I lost my livelihood? Why am I now in the run out of Jerusalem, away from my home and my birthplace? Why am I suddenly an exile out of the country? Very simply, God's plan, God's will had to be done. God had a wonderful purpose in allowing this persecution to come. Oh yes, the wicked ones were rejoicing. Saul's filled with joy. It's rejoicing for him and all of those men. They're thinking, we are victorious. This church which has grown so much over these last number of weeks and days, and the thousands that are now claiming to be Christians, we're scattering them, we're killing them, we're arresting them, we're destroying the church. We're never going to hear from them again. We're putting down this movement. Yet all they did was simply God's will to spread the gospel. You know, it's like the persecution was like just a big giant fan. And that fan being waved, just scattering everything, scattering the seed, because that's what it means. That word that's there for scattered throughout, it gives the thought of a seed being spread. And you think of those seeds as they come off the tree and the wind just carries them and blows them and blows them, and then they land. That's what's happening with the gospel here. It's just being fanned and fanned, and it's just scattering further and further. It's not just in the nucleus of Jerusalem anymore. It's now going into Judea. It's going into Samaria. As David Thomas said, the wind of persecution often fans the torch of truth. F.B. Meyer, he said, storms cannot shipwreck the gospel. They will simply waft it forward. You think of the picture of a salt shaker. A salt shaker, and you turn it over and you just shake it. Salt's going to land everywhere. It's not just going to come out in one tiny wee pile. It's going to scatter all over the place, especially if you allow a child near it in a dinner table. There's going to be salt everywhere. What's happening here with the gospel? It's the salt of the earth. The Christians of that day, the salt of the earth, they're shaken and they're scattered, and they're now in Judea, they're now in Samaria, they're going from town to town, city to city. And what's happening? Souls are being saved. Souls are still being saved, by the way, in Jerusalem. Because did you notice the words at the end of verse 1? It says, now they're scattered abroad throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria, except the apostles. And the apostles had said at the start of chapter 6 that we give ourselves to the prayer and to the preaching. So here's the apostles, they're left behind in Jerusalem, and they're still praying and they're still preaching. And daily souls are still being added on to the church. But now there's Christians in Judea. There's Christians in Samaria. And now they're hearing the gospel. You just imagine as this family turns up in your town. Where are you from? Jerusalem. Why'd you come here? Persecuted for our faith. Why, what's your faith? We believe that Christ died on the cross, but he rose from the dead. Opportunities. More and more souls hearing the gospel, being saved. They're simply following the blueprint. Acts 1 and 8. Stay in Jerusalem, then go to Judea and Samaria, unto the uttermost parts of the earth. Times of hardship, they obey the Lord. They don't leave Jerusalem and go to Judea and Samaria and give up on Christ. They don't run away and say, right, that's it. We've got out with our lives. I'm never going to mention the gospel again. No. They say, God's will is that we go into Judea and Samaria and preach the gospel. And even though their lives were dramatically changed, their faith is in him. Even though their circumstances are changed, it's not because of punishment, it's because of God's will. All things work together for good. And God's will was, I have people in Judea, Samaria. You must reach them. They must be saved. Brothers and sisters, when we're in the midst of the attack, we feel the flames and the heat of the persecution against us. Trust his word. We may not understand why God allows certain things to happen. We may never understand why in this world, why God allows things to happen. One day we will. We see through the glass darkly. One day we see face to face. Martyrdom had come. But Christ and his church certainly were not defeated. Saul had done his worst, tore the church apart. But yet now there were going to be churches throughout the land. Not just one in Jerusalem. But now there's going to be one called Antioch. And there's going to be one called Ephesus. There's going to be one called Galatia. There's going to be one called Laodicea. Philadelphia. Smyrna. Thyatira. All because the seeds went out. The breath of God just simply blew it. Child of God, trust in him. Don't give up. Don't give up in those times of hardship. All things work together for good. And that applies to you as an individual. Applies to the church collectively. Even when we see the attack, we see the liberal laws that they're seeking to enforce and bring in and even enforce upon Christians. God's a plan behind it all. God's still in the throne. God will perfect that which concerneth us. Trust in him.